Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is the best-selling author Alifair Burke. She's out with her latest novel, The Better Sister. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. It's a psychological thriller, but more importantly, it's a thriller because you just keep turning the pages. You don't want to stop. Now, see if you can follow me on this. It's very simple. Chloe and Nikki are sisters. They're estranged. They're from Cleveland. Nikki was married to Chloe's current husband, Adam McIntosh. Nikki and Adam's son, Ethan, lives with Chloe and Adam. There's all kinds of family secrets that go into this, but that's the setup for it. And I've gotten in trouble from thriller writers before for giving too much away. So can you kind of explain just the plot you want people want people to know going in, Alifair?
Sure. Thanks a lot for having me. You did a good summary of the setup that is a little complicated family history that Chloe is married to her big sister's ex-husband. and that's complicated enough, but then Adam, the husband, is murdered. And because Chloe's been raising Adam's son, which is her nephew, and Nikki's biological son, she has to, you know, bring Nikki back into her life, and then things get even more complicated when the son, Ethan, becomes a leading suspect in the father's murder, and these two women have to reunite and kind of make it work for the son's sake, and things happen, as you pointed out. This is hopefully surprising, and you also find out the reasons why they're estranged and how it connects to Ethan.
Well, I learned not to try to even guess how the ending goes, because by the time I got to it, it was nowhere near where I thought it was going to go. But you know, one of the things about thrillers that makes that has some thrillers stand out above others is these relationships. And the crazy relationship that you had, it's not that uncommon. I mean, it's not unheard of, but it's not a common type of relationship between these two sisters that they were both married to the same man, and they're both alive to talk about it. So can you kind of take me back to where you came up with the genesis for this idea? I mean, I know you don't know how the creative process necessarily works or where these ideas come from, but what were you trying to accomplish with this particular crazy scenario that's not that common?
Yeah, I think what is common, though, is the idea that siblings who at one point were really close just over the years, as adult relationships get more complicated and there's geographic distance and emotional distance, that siblings find themselves almost like strangers, but then at the same time you have years of shared memories and shared blood ties, and those adult sibling relationships can be really complicated. I also think it's common, you know, sisters, there can sometimes be a fine line between loyalty and resentment, you know, and competition. And so I wanted to do something with two sisters who had fallen apart from each other, and then to really crystallize it and make it, okay, well, what would break them? Like, what would make it so awkward for the two of them to be involved with each other? And it's like, oh, I know. If, you know, what starts as a friendship with her former brother-in-law, you know, turns into, over the course of time, a romance and then a marriage, that complicates things pretty quickly.
Well, there's a trial involved, and a lot of the story is told through the lens of the trial. Going to your law school and now your professor background that you have, teaching criminal law at Hofstra University's law school, when you put together these stories in a book, I would think that a lot of this stuff is ingrained in you as far as procedure and how these things go, but what kind of research goes into how these particular facts would come out at a criminal trial?
Yeah, I'm lucky in that regard. I don't have to do a lot of research, and I think it's natural for me, even though I don't really think of my books as legal thrillers or courtroom thrillers, I know what the shape of a criminal investigation and a criminal trial process look like. And, you know, sometimes I use those systems and procedures to kind of cast a shadow over what a story that's really a more personal story. But so these sisters are already struggling with, you know, grieving over this shared husband and trying to protect the son, and then to have the police showing up at their door and to not have any control over that and to not trust the system to get it right, I think ramps up the tension.
With the title The Better Sister, I went back and forth as I read this trying to decide who was the better sister and who was good and bad, and a lot of times that operates in the gray area. Did you have the same experience as you created these characters in your mind?
Yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to play with is, you know, if you think about the way people talk about siblings, they get typecast from a very young age, right? You hear about, like, babies in the crib are labeled, like, oh, he's our fussy one or he's the good one. And Chloe was always the honor student. And she was the one who, even though she was the younger sister, she kind of took care of the rest of the family in some important ways as she got older. And, you know, she checks all the boxes in terms of, like, being the good girl, whereas Nikki was more troubled and was more rebellious and could never really land a job or stay in a healthy relationship. But then when you see them as adults, you can see that neither one of them is perfect, you know. So I did mean for it to not be entirely clear that either one of them was necessarily better than the other. They're just really different.
Another aspect of this book is you invoke the Hamptons as one of the locations, and I'm not all that familiar with New York City, but where, I know people weekend in the Hamptons or summer in the Hamptons. How far is the Hamptons from Midtown Manhattan?
It's about 110 miles east, and that can take 2 hours or it can take 5 hours in the middle of summer. But the Hamptons is an interesting place. My last three books have had little echoes of the Hamptons in them because you've got the part that people have heard of, right? That we're glitzy vacationers, city people on the weekend. They're about, you know, they're one-third of the picture out there, and then you have the long-term locals that established that community as really a fishing and a farming community. And then you have immigrants there. So you've kind of got these three populations of people that can't really exist without each other, but there's resentments, there's class and racial resentments out there, and it's an interesting place to kind of take a city story and have it partially play out in that environment.
I'm chatting with Alifair Burke, who's out with her new novel, The Better Sister. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Alifair, I heard you a week or two ago on the Howard Stern wrap-up show with John Hine and Gary Delabate. So I had to ask, because I knew this was coming up, that type of experience going into that setting, I don't know if you've been on before. It's the first time I've ever heard you. But when you go into there, that's just such an iconic radio program and a media market. What's that like for you going in there?
Yeah, well, so I'm a huge super fan, as I call, of the Howard Stern Show, and I have been for years. So the wrap-up show is the show after the Howard Stern Show where you basically sit around and gossip with John and Baba Booey about what just happened. And I think it's the third time I've done it. I started doing it. Laura Lippman, another writer, goes on there a lot, and she had introduced me to the producers, and I started going on there. And it's great fun. It's a bit of... People who don't watch the show just don't get it. They meet me and they're like, how can you like Howard Stern? And then people who listen to the show and are, you know, really devoted to it are like, oh, that's so cool that you did that.
Well, you don't have any particular speech impediment or anything, so you can't be a whackpacker, right?
I'm not a whackpacker. No, I'm a super fan. Yeah, there's two different things. I'll proudly claim my super fan status. I'm not a whackpacker.
Well, it's funny because Howard's got his book coming out now, and you made a comment on there that, you know, Howard, all he has to do is get on the radio to sell books. You're chucking around to book readings at Barnes & Nobles in Trenton, New Jersey, and things like that.
Yeah. Not particularly the same level of glamour. He's like, which nighttime shows should I go on? You know, Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Fallon? I'll be at the Cleveland Barnes & Noble off the side of the highway.
Well, you know, you have this book, and there is a Cleveland aspect to it, that both these sisters were raised in Cleveland, and I think Cleveland has put out some media that they're kind of excited for you to come. What's that like when you choose a setting for your book, and you visit the town, and you hear from the people that it's a little tip of the hat to their town, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fun for people when they're reading a place, and they're like, oh, I know that park, you know, or I know that restaurant. I try to, you know, you've also got to be careful not to get things wrong or just do something that insults the city, like say it's a terrible place or something like that. So I try to avoid pitfalls like that. The couple of times I've made some place like a real hellhole, I've made up a fictional town, but of course I know what it's based on. I don't tell anybody.
So do you Google map this or do you go travel to Cleveland?
That one, I think I've been to Cleveland, but to the extent I wanted, I think there's a couple of references to geographic locations. I had to refresh my memory online. Yeah, that's really helpful. Back in the old days, you had to call the library and hope that some very nice librarian would help you do research.
Well, I've had Mary Higgins Clark on several times, and a couple of times talking about the books that you've co-written with her. I know you've done that for a few years now for the Under Suspicion series. What's that experience been like for you as a writer and just as a person?
Oh, I still have to pinch myself, but, you know, like, oh, yeah, I've written five novels with Mary Higgins Clark. It's kind of surreal. But she and I work really well together. I think that what we share in common, even though our books can be a little different, we write separately, is that we find the plot through character. Like, you know, the plot of The Better Sister, for example, really wouldn't make sense unless you really understand who these two women are as characters and what's driving them. And so when she and I sit down to write a book together, we always start by talking about who the character is, and then we put them in a weird predicament. You know, you're married to your ex, your sister's ex-husband, and then he gets killed. And then we kind of play with, okay, so then what's going to happen next? And we're able to find a story pretty seamlessly that way.
Do you go into a job like that on even footing? I mean, you give criticism to her and she'll give it to you, or do you get do you get intimidated?
I wouldn't say it's intimidation, but it's respect, you know, that she's been doing this a really long time, and I think we both trust each other's instincts, but, you know, I'm not going to tell her, oh, I think you're wrong. she gets to drive the train.
Have you seen any cultural gaps? I mean, you know, she's 90-something right now, and you're 30-something, and, you know, at the things that are going on in law enforcement now, or, you know, just in general, the cultural, you know, societal evolution,
right,
as they say, is that, are there cultural gaps in as far as the ideas for stories you come up with versus her?
Well, I use a lot of technology in my books, you know, the kind of the cover of the anonymity of the internet, or, you know, just the clever ways that people can use technology either to do bad things or to do, you know, good things if they're the investigators. And so I think that you'll see more of that in our joint books than you might see in her solo efforts. But like I said, I think our focus on character and story was pretty timeless.
I know you teach law school on the side when you're not writing, and or maybe it's the other way around. But, you know, I had law professors who, they wrote the Law Review articles, and we all had to read them just to kind of get an idea. And I know you do that too, but for the students, do the students read your books, your novels?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they really don't have the time for it. You know, it doesn't affect them. It's not on the final. It's not going to help them get their preferred job. So their head is pretty much in the law school game. But some of them will sheepishly come to my office around, you know, holiday break and say, my mom's a huge fan. Will you sign this book for her? And of course, obviously, I'm happy to do it. But they always seem a little embarrassed about their parents.
Well, your readers, when you hear back from them, did they find things in the book that stood out to them as important that you didn't necessarily think was an important detail?
Yeah, I'm always surprised about when I hear from people that they're like, oh, well, I thought so-and-so did it. And that won't have even dawned on me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I could see that, you know, but it's not the way I meant to mislead. Yeah.
And when you go in to teach your classes and, you know, the criminal procedure, I think you teach criminal law and procedure, right?
Yes.
Okay. That area of the law is changing so much with the new Supreme Court, but you've followed these trends over the time. Is that a very fast moving area of the law right now as you try to teach the young future lawyers going out into the world?
Yeah, not really the substance, not the criminal law itself, like the, you know, the definition of murder is still murder, like those things don't change, but in terms of investigatory things, when there are big shifts in criminal procedural stuff at the Supreme Court level, it's hard for me to explain to them why it changed. I mean, it's almost like you're teaching a history class of why the rules would have been different 40 years from now, or 40 years ago from now. And it's tempting to just be really cynical and just tell them there is no reason. It's because this court changed, you know. There's no logic to it whatsoever. So you've got to kind of try to pretend like there's a logic to it while also getting them to maybe see realistically what other dynamics are at play.
When I just think technology-wise, you know, 5 years ago, police could search a cell phone without a warrant, and
yeah,
now they need a warrant. Yeah. That's got to be a big one.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there are a lot of things that have changed. That's probably the biggest one, is just the idea of what is private. You know, it used to be like if you shared a little bit of information, you had to share it all, and I think the court's kind of pushing back on that, but yeah.
All right, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, how's your father doing?
My dad's great. He's in Montana, still writing a book a year. Pretty amazing. I've got, between him and Mary Higgins Clark, I think they're together 174 years old, if I'm doing my math right.
Well, we've had your father James.
A lot of books. Yeah.
We've had James Lee Burke on, and so it's always a pleasure to have him on, too. But this is the first time we've had you on. So, Alla Faire, it was great to talk to you. The book is The Better Sister. It's by Alla Faire Burke. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Go out and pick it up. And also pick up the books, the Under Suspicion series that she writes with Mary Higgins Clark. They are fantastic. Alla Faire, thanks for a great time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Sister.